This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Dennis Reese. Spring is only a couple of weeks old, but it's beginning to look and feel like the real thing. Grass is growing, bushes are budding, and the seed catalogs are being dusted off. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa today with Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Extension entomologist Laura Jesse. We have an hour to talk about the plants and insects in your life. On the bug side, Laura will tell us why we're getting the fake ladybugs in our houses. Ever wonder where those things are coming from? And on the plant side, we'll hear about dividing perennials, planting onions. We're live, and we'll take your calls and emails this hour on Hort Day with the Horticulture Gang from Iowa State University Extension. Following news from National Public Radio and Iowa Public Radio.
This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander, and our guests today are Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Extension entomologist Laura Jesse. And we're going to take your questions about anything you want to grow or grow better and any insects in your life. Let us know. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or email your questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day. Welcome, Richard and Laura. How are you this morning?
Just great. Nice morning. Very nice morning.
It's terrific out so far. Let's start maybe with the entomologist today and these Asian ladybugs that seem to be wandering into indoors. What should we know about them, Laura?
Well, these are the multicolored Asian lady beetle or lady bug. They've been in the walls, in the attic all winter long, perfectly happy. You know, the weather's starting to warm up. Right now their biology is telling them to go outside and, you know, lay eggs. And so they're trying to just get outside, but in the walls it's a bit confusing, no direction. So a lot of them end up wandering into the living area of the house. So you start to see them wandering around in the kitchen and living room. I see them in my bathroom, around the bathtub a lot. It's kind of the water source, I think. So that's where they end up.
And how are they different from other lady beetles that we know of?
They're a species. They're all in the same group, so it's related very closely to the other lady beetles or ladybugs, whatever you prefer to call them. They are from Asia, so they're not native to the U.S., but they feed on all sorts of pests, aphids, other pests in the garden. So they are beneficial, except when they're wandering around in your house.
Okay. So other than in the house. All right. Mm-hmm. Of course. All right. We'll go to our first callers here. George in Mason City. Welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question for Richard Giron and Laura Jesse today?
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have a question for you both about oak wilt. We have some trees with some dead branches, and our tree trimmers have not come yet. And my husband is concerned about oak wilt. And I did go to the USDA forestry site, and there was something about from April 15th to July 1st, the conditions are favorable for the spread of oak wilt. Am I reading that right?
Spring, early summer is the worst time, and so we typically say April 1st to July 1st is the period of highest risk, and we discourage pruning at that point. The best time to prune basically is December, January, and February. Okay. And right now we're into April, so I would assume that the insects might be present.
Yeah, this time of the year, if you do have to prune or if there's damage, you would want to paint that wound with a latex-based paint rapidly. I was just learning that the insects that spread the oak wilt fungus, it's insects that move from the and carry the spores on their body, will come to a wound within 10 to 15 minutes even. So they're very rapidly attracted to those fresh wounds. So this is the time of the year where I would not risk pruning.
Okay, I will call them off. I appreciate your advice. Thank you.
Well, thanks for calling. We appreciate your calling in. We'll go next to Patty in Des Moines. Patty, welcome to Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day. What's your question?
I'm buying plants from nurseries now, seedlings, and I'd like to know when I can put them in the ground.
What kind of seedlings?
All kinds.
Okay, could you name a few?
I'm not sure. I'm calling for my mother. Maybe I should have her call you back.
As far as seedlings, you have some seedlings that are let's say, frost tolerant, that they can tolerate a frost or freeze. And then you have other seedlings that are frost sensitive, where a frost or freeze might damage or destroy them. So those kind of those two groups. And as far as those that are frost sensitive, I would be shooting for, as far as a planting date outdoors, I would be shooting for basically around May 1st, as far as a planting date. Obviously, in Iowa, our weather is very fickle. We can have a frost or freeze in mid to late May. That's possible. But I think if you were to plant, like in the Des Moines area, things that are basically frost-sensitive, things like tomatoes and peppers and patients, things like that, that if you start planting around May 1st, you should be fine most years. But before you plant, another thing, if you have these plants, set them outside and initially put them in the shade and gradually expose those plants to direct sun. So after maybe about a week or 10 days, they should be hardened off nicely. Then they can stay outside in the sun. But if there's any forecast of a frost or freeze that night, just bring them inside overnight and then bring them back outside the next morning.
Okay, I'll follow your advice. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Patty. Good luck with those. We'll go next to Craig in Mason City. If other listeners like to call in about the plants and insects in their lives, call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Craig, go ahead. What's on your mind today?
I'm calling to see if it's too late to prune any fruit trees and or walnut trees.
No, I would try to do those maybe this weekend. If you do, you should be fine. We like to prune those before they begin to leaf out. And so I would try to get it done very soon, but you should be okay in northern Iowa.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Craig. We appreciate it. What about planting onions this time of year and those and root vegetables like that? Richard, what should we be aware of?
Well, we like to plant those early in the spring, and you have basically three choices. You can plant seed, you can plant sets, or basically are small bulbs, and plants. So you have those choice. As far as the gardener is concerned, sets and plants are the easiest. Now, when you buy sets, typically you're buying a color, like white or red onions. You're not really buying a variety. When you buy young plants, you can buy varieties. And if you want a storage-type onion, make sure you choose one that stores well. Some store very well, like copra. Others do not. As far as planting them, you want to get them in the ground as soon as you can. With the sets, you want to plant those bulbs about an inch deep, about 2 or 3 inches apart. With the plants, again, about an inch deep and about 2 or 3 inches apart. And as far as varieties, if you're looking for a good storage onion, copra is a very good storage onion. Stuttgarter, which is a set, is also a good storage onion. So there are some very good storage onions.
Okay. We'll go next to Carl in Palo. Welcome to Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day. Carl, what's your question?
Well, hi. Thanks for the program.
Sure.
Say, I got a whole bunch of maple tree seedlings there in a wooded area, and the grass is kind of overtaking the trees, you know, like they're about 2, 3, 4 feet tall. How do I keep the grass out? Can I use Roundup, or do I kill the trees?
Well, you can use Roundup. Just make sure you don't get it on the tree themselves or the trees themselves. So you could maybe protect them somehow, but you can go out there with the Roundup, and as long as you don't get it on the foliage of the tree or the trunk of the tree, you should be fine.
Yeah, but that's kind of difficult to do because they're so close together there, you know?
Well, what you can maybe do, for example, you might take a small plastic food container that you get maybe at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Maybe cut out the bottom, make a cut along the side, and then place that around the trunk of the tree and then spray around it with Roundup. So you could do something like that and kind of shield the tree from the spray.
Okay, yeah. So, I can try that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, thanks for calling, Carl. 1-866-780-9100 is the number to call for a Horticulture Day. Anything on your mind about plants or insects? Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Extension entomologist Laura Jesse are here today to answer your questions. We also have email here. You can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Email from Sarah. She says, is it time to apply crabgrass preventer, and should it be applied before or after rain?
Well, ideally, you'd like to apply that right before rain, because for it to be effective, it has to be dissolved and carried into the soil. And as far as timing-wise, it depends upon where you live in the state. We typically say if you live in southern Iowa, it should be applied normally in early to mid-April. If you live in central Iowa, typically mid-April to May 1st. And if you live in northern Iowa, around May 1st, May 5th. And there are some cues that you can look to as far as Mother Nature. When the forsythia, which is a very common shrub that has the bright yellow flowers, when that plant is about done blooming, is the proper time to put on your pre-emergent. They kind of coincide as far as timing-wise. And so if you still are a little bit confused, you can look at that shrub and decide whether to do it or not.
Okay. And for those who may not know, what's the difference between crabgrass and regular grass as far as looks? What's a good description?
Well, crabgrass is an annual grass, so it dies basically in the fall with the first hard freeze. But before it dies, it produces thousands of seed. Mm. And so each spring those seeds germinate. And so if you had a problem with crabgrass last year, most likely you'll have a problem this year. And basically, we put on our pre-emergent to prevent them from coming back in. The actual plant has a fairly wide leaf blade, kind of a medium green, not a dark green. It kind of lays down. It's kind of flattish. Mm. And it really, really grows very, very well during the summer months, basically July and August. It really grows quite well when the bluegrass is kind of struggling, not doing so well. It is doing very, very well. It likes the heat. And so it's very, very noticeable in July and August. And before it goes to seed, before it dies, it does produce a lot of seeds. So we put on our pre-emergent in the spring. And basically what that does, it prevents the actual seed from germinating so it doesn't grow.
Okay. We have calls coming in. If you have a question for Richard Giron, Extension horticulturist, or Extension entomologist Laura Jesse, give us a call at 1-866-780-9100. We're going to be taking a very short break here, and we'll be back. Take your calls about plants you want to grow or insects that you have in your life that you're just not sure about, whether they bedevil or befriend you. We'll have those answers coming up after the break on Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander, and our guests, Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Extension entomologist Laura Jesse, are here to answer your questions about plants and insects in your life. Call in at 1-866-780-9100 or write to us, Talk of Iowa, iowapublicradio.org. And we'll go to Cindy in Cedar Rapids. Cindy, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Hi, I just had a question about uncovering hostas. We have in our summer home in Guttenberg, actually, we have hostas coming up, but they're covered with a leaf mulch. And just wondering if it's too soon to start uncovering those. It's supposed to be very warm next week.
Uncover those as soon as you can. Do that as soon as you can. I would say on a typical year, if you do that maybe the last few days in March, the first few days in April, you'll be just fine.
Oh, great. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Cindy. We'll go next to Karen in Swisher. Karen, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Hi.
Hi. Are you on a speakerphone or?
Pardon?
Are you on a speakerphone?
Yes, I can take it off.
That would be great. It'd be easier for us to hear you.
there. Is that okay?
That's terrific. Great. Thanks, Karen. We appreciate it. What's your question?
I have two spruce trees. One is green and one is blue, and I've had them since 2001. The center lower part of them looks dead, but the out on the edge, they're green. And I don't know whether to cut those off or is that the way they're supposed to be. They're in the middle of the yard. We're out in the country, and they are have shade and sun, not 100% sun. And my husband puts fertilizer around them out in the yard. You know, he does a hole, digs a hole, and then puts these tubes of fertilizer in. So I don't know what to do with those. They don't look very good.
Well, the first thing would be, as far as the branches themselves, if you have branches that are totally brown, there are no green needles on those branches, those branches are likely dead, and I would prune those off. Those that have green needles at the very ends, they're still alive, and I would leave those. But if you have branches that are totally brown, have no green needles on them, they're basically dead, and I'd prune those off. Now, as far as fertilization, I typically don't see a need to do that. Most soils in Iowa are quite fertile, and there's not a need to do that, and especially if you fertilize the lawn. If you do fertilize the lawn periodically, you are indirectly fertilizing the spruce trees. So there's really no need to directly fertilize the spruce trees. One thing you can do that might be beneficial, if we have a prolonged dry period where it hasn't rained for several weeks, then you could go out and water those trees, and that might be beneficial. As far as some of the needle drop, you may have a disease on that. You may have rhizosphere needle cast, which is fairly common on spruce. You could send a sample to the plant diagnostic clinic here at Iowa State, and they could examine that and maybe confirm that. But that would be a definite possibility, rhizosphere needle cast.
And there's a way to treat that?
Yes, there is. If that is diagnosed as such, you can actually spray that in the spring twice as the new growth is coming out, and that would protect the new growth so it doesn't get it. So you could send a sample in now and still have time to spray it this spring.
Okay, and what's that called again?
It's the Plant Diagnostic Clinic here at Iowa State. And an easy way to do that is if you have a computer and internet access, go to the Iowa State University homepage, which is www.iastate.edu.
Okay.
And at the homepage, they have a search box in the upper right-hand corner. And simply type in Plant Diagnostic Clinic. It should go right to their site.
Okay.
Well, thanks for calling, Karen. Good luck. We appreciate the call.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye now. Bye. We'll go next to Jim in Davenport. Jim, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Julie, Laura, Richard, thank you for taking my call. Apple maggots. My wife went to the local ISU extension, and they told her that what we had was apple maggots, but they didn't. Either they didn't tell her, or she didn't ask. Or they, what do we do to spray a pear tree that has an infestation of apple maggots?
Well, you can use sprays. Apple maggots, though, should be mainly on apples. I'm not sure that they would be a problem on pear in most cases, but you can use. And as far as a homeowner, the best choice would be some type of generic home orchard spray. Most garden centers carry such a product, and they typically contain two insecticides and a fungicides. And you can apply those to most fruit trees like apples and pears. And if you do that on a regular basis, that should prevent most insect damage to fruit trees like apples and pears. That's the key, doing it on a regular basis and doing it thoroughly, which is kind of hard to do when you have to deal with rain and things like that and a busy schedule. But if you can do that, you can reduce the damage quite a bit. It may not be perfect, but the damage should be reduced and they should be quite edible.
And how long should that, how long would it take? Like, would that be possible to affect this year's crop by spraying starting now?
Well, actually, the critical time as far as on your fruit trees, like your apples and the pears, is during the time when the fruit are actually developing. So we don't really have to worry right now, But as soon as the trees are done blooming, as soon as we have petal drop, then you start spraying, and then you do so on a regular basis until shortly before harvest. And there will be a waiting period listed on the label, and it'll tell you how long to wait before you can pick the fruit. So you have to kind of know that. But basically, you spray during the time when the actual fruit is developing, because during that time, insects can attack them and damage them, and that's what you're trying to prevent.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Jim. We'll go next to Corey in East Moline, Illinois. Corey, welcome to Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Well, I have some pretty substantial iris beds, and they've all been invaded by some kind of real rooty grass, and I don't know what kind of grass it is, but short of digging these rhizomes all up and cleaning it all out of there, is there anything that can be put into the flower beds to either kill this grass or get rid of it or stunt it or something?
It's very, very difficult. I think the best thing would be, because they need to be divided anyway every so often, I think the best thing would be probably wait until July, dig up your irises, set them on the side, put them in a flat or something, and put them in a shady area, and then basically destroy the grass as best you can, and then replant. I don't think there are very, very many herbicides out there that's going to kill existing perennial-type grasses like quackgrass and brome and things like that. They're just very, very hard to control.
Yeah.
They come up from their underground stems or rhizomes, and you have to destroy all of that, all those rhizomes in the ground. If you leave certain parts, they sprout back from those parts very readily.
Okay.
So it's very, very difficult to do. So I would think waiting till maybe midsummer, digging them up, setting them aside, and then really attacking that area, digging it up, getting down, and very carefully removing all those rhizomes in the soil, and doing that a few weeks, and then replanting might be your best choice.
Okay. It's labor-intensive.
Yeah, it is. It is.
All right. Thanks for your help.
Thanks for calling, Corey. We appreciate it. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. If you have questions for Extension Horticulture's Richard Geron or Extension Entomologist Laura Jesse today, call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be going in for a break here for about 5 minutes. We do have coming up in just a moment, but we could go to a quick email. We have someone, I believe Dave is asking about box elder bugs. How should they be dealt with indoors, and are they harmless?
Again, those, just like the lady beetles, harmless indoors. They've been in the walls all winter long. They don't survive long indoors. The best thing to do is to just vacuum them up. And I expect with the warm weather, all of these insects will be out and about and done with. So just be patient for a few weeks and use the vacuum as best as you can.
Okay. So I've heard them referred to as red bees, but they're not bees at all. They're just...
They don't sting.
They don't stink.
They don't get in your kitchen. They just pretty much die after a few days anyway.
Just annoying.
They're just annoying.
They're just trying to be friends. All right. We're going to take a 5-minute break here, but we'll be right back. When we do, Richard Geron and Laura Jesse will be here to take your questions. 1-866-780-9100 or write to Talk of Iowa, iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Drilling for oil, mining for coal, that's more important to Americans than protecting the environment. This is the Environment Report. I'm Lester Graham. For the first time since Gallup started asking the question 9 years ago, the pollster has found Americans put a higher priority on energy production than environmental protection. Frank Newport is the editor-in-chief for Gallup. He says 50% of those polled put energy production as a higher priority, while 43% put environmental protection as a higher priority.
In other words, I think some Americans are saying we don't have the luxury at the moment of worrying about the environment in the bad economic times.
Attitudes seem to be affected by the down economy more than anything else. Even when gasoline was $4 a gallon, most of the people polled put protecting the environment ahead of energy production. Not anymore. This is the Environment Report. Extracting oil from oil shale takes a lot of water. Well, most of the oil shale in the U.S. is in areas where there's not a lot of water. Conrad Wilson reports one big oil company seems to be walking away from oil shale for that reason. But not everyone thinks that's the case.
In the western U.S., some energy companies are betting big on oil shale. That's a process of basically heating up a shale rock into a liquid that's eventually refined into oil. The process of creating oil shale is energy intensive and uses a lot of water. That's a problem in the arid West. Royal Dutch Shell has the most invested in developing an oil shale technology that works. So earlier this year, when the company announced it was pulling away from water rights, it sent shockwaves through the industry.
I read that decision as Shell's acknowledgement that oil shale is a long way off and that, in a sense, it's not worth it.
That's Claire Bastable of the Western Energy Project. It's an environmental group that keeps an eye on energy issues in the West. Shell had been pursuing water rights on the Yampa River in the northwest portion of Colorado.
Shell's decision was a big deal. I mean, we're talking about 15 billion gallons of water. It would have basically taken the Yampa River, which is one of the last kind of free-flowing rivers in the West, and diverted a huge proportion of it to Shell for potential oil shale development.
But Shell knows there's an estimated 800 billion barrels of usable oil in the shale in Wyoming, Colorado, and Utah. Dr. Jeremy Boak researches oil shale development at the Colorado School of Mines. He says Shell could be simply postponing extracting that oil.
With all of the comments they've made about what's the timescale for oil shale, Shell has been pretty comfortable that this is going to take time.
Shell says that even though it's no longer pursuing water rights on the Yampa River right now, it's in no way backing off its larger ambitions for oil shale. In a written statement, the company said, the, quote, ultimate goal is to create a commercial oil shale recovery operation that's economically viable, environmentally responsible, and socially sustainable. Environmentalists in the region hope they won't. They say Shell's decision not to pursue the water right now should be a signal to others. Oil shale just might not be worth the effort.
By the way, back in September 2007, Rebecca Williams reported there was no evidence that antibacterial soaps were any better than plain old soap and water. Well, this week, the Food and Drug Administration caught up with us. In a post on its website, the FDA stated, quote, at this time, the agency does not have evidence that triclosan in antibacterial soaps and body washes provides any benefit over washing with regular soap and water. Ha! Told you so. That's the Environment Report. I'm Lester Graham.
Support comes from the Park Foundation, the Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation, and the Great Lakes Fishery Trust. You can find more information and post your comments at environmentreport.org. The Environment Report comes from the University of Michigan.
This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander, and Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Extension Entomologist Laura Jesse are here to answer your questions about the plants and insects in your life. Call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll go to Pat in Davenport, who's been waiting. Pat, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
I have an Italian plum tree. It's probably at least 10 years old. For the last 3 years, it has had a bumper crop on it, and then it gets all the plums probably develop halfway, and then it drops all of them. I've not tasted a plum from it yet.
I'm not sure why that's occurring. One thing I would try doing is, if it does produce a heavy crop this year, go out, if you can, in late May and hand-thin the crop. Because if it's really full, they do tend to naturally shed. But I would go out in late May, early June, and actually thin out some of those fruit. And when you're done thinning, there should be a plum about every 6 inches on the branch and no more than that. So you may have to take off quite a few and see if that doesn't help. It might. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because it just has been loaded every year, and then they just
how big, yeah, how big do they get in size?
About half the size that a good Italian plum would be.
Okay.
And that would
they
be
even
good.
They even get, you know, some color. Okay. They look very nice, and then they just drop.
Try that. Try thinning and see if that helps.
Mm-hmm. And take a sample and keep some and let us know, you know, if that happens again, because there are some insects, you know, plum curculio and stuff. And if we can look at the plums, we can help figure out if that could be the problem.
Oh, all right. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for calling, Pat. We appreciate it. We'll go next to Steve in Des Moines. Steve, welcome to the program. What's your question?
I have a quick pre-question here. I already applied my pre-emergent here in Des Moines. Should I reapply it when the yellow flowers fall off the bushes?
No, I think you'll be okay. Crabgrass typically germinates over several weeks, but the actual herbicide also does persist for several weeks. So I think you'll be okay. You might have a few crabgrass seeds that germinate late in the spring, but I don't think you're going to see that big of a problem, no.
Okay, my main question is on zoysia grass. My front yard is being taken over by zoysia. How do I get rid of it?
Not a good story as far as getting rid of it. Zoysia grass is a warm season grass. It greens up late, typically in May. It turns brown fairly early in the fall. It's hard to kill, unfortunately. Okay. If you were to try, it's kind of a project over several months. And what I would do if you have zoysia grass and want to get rid of it is probably go out maybe early June or so. By then it should be nice and green, actively growing. Okay? Mm-hmm. And then apply Roundup to it.
Okay.
And that should hopefully kill most of it. If you go out 2 weeks later and there are still areas that are green, spray them a second time.
Okay.
Then wait another week or two, and then physically remove the dead sod. And you may have to go down about 2 inches.
Okay.
And you can rent a sod cutter and do that.
Okay.
If you need to. Now, you've gotten rid of most of the dead sod, but my guess is there are still a few roots in the soil that are still alive.
Okay.
And they'll send up some shoots probably in a few weeks. And when they do, hit them again with Roundup. And keep on doing that until about mid-September.
Okay.
And hopefully by then it's going to be dead.
So you're going to have a bare yard.
You're going to have, this is a work under construction for several months.
And you can't just slap some sod over the top of it once you kill most of it.
Well,
rip it off.
If you don't get it completely destroyed, it's going to come back up through the sod.
Okay.
It's more vigorous than the bluegrass sod. So that's why you don't want to do this whole process and not kill it completely. Otherwise, it's going to be back in a couple of years.
Okay.
So hopefully by mid-September, hopefully it's dead. And then I would buy some sod and lay some sod. I would not sow grass seed because the grass seed is kind of weak and it's going to take time for it to get established. I want some really healthy, thick sod placed back on the ground so that if there are any tiny little roots, maybe the sod might be so thick that they can't survive and won't make it.
Okay, and don't sod until September then?
Yeah, I'd probably be doing it around mid to late September would be a great time to do it, and that gives you basically June, July, August, and early September to kill the zoysia grass. It takes that long.
Wow. Okay, that's a bigger project than I thought it was going to be.
It is a process, Steve.
Okay.
This is one of those plants that, you know, one application of Roundup or digging it up, one application, one treatment is not going to be enough. It takes quite a bit of effort.
Okay. Yeah. And one more quick thing. Is it okay to fertilize established hedges now? I have a hedge of that tall, slim bush. I forgot the name of it. And it's just starting to leaf out. Should I go ahead and fertilize now?
I don't think you have to. Most Iowa soils are fairly fertile, but if you want to, now's a good time.
Okie doke.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks a lot.
We appreciate it. Bye-bye. We'll go next to Molly in Iowa City. Molly, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
I also have a question about grass. I live in a condo building right now, and we have a lot of brown spots. My mom and I are on the board together, and we have a lot of brown spotting on our grass, and I believe it's from a dog urinating.
Could be.
And it's leaving spots. So is there any way to get rid of that or treat the grass or prevent it from happening?
Well, the only way to prevent that from happening would be to not allow dogs to be on the grass. That's just kind of the thing that happens. The dog spots are typically not huge. They're usually maybe 8 inches, maybe a foot in diameter usually.
Yeah.
And the grass typically dies out. And about the only thing you can do is once the damage has occurred is to go out there maybe in the spring or late summer and maybe kind of scratch those little areas with like a rake or something, and then sow some grass seed and then kind of rake the seed into the soil and basically get grass to grow back in the area. Basically, it's a case of the urine basically burns and destroys the grass. It's so concentrated that it burns and destroys the grass, and you have to kind of reseed. So the only way to prevent that is if somehow keeping the dogs off the grass, which is easier said than done.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
Okay. Yeah, that's all I had. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling, Molly. We appreciate the question. We have an email from Jeff in Carbon Isle Cliff, Illinois. He says, we started creating our garden bed last weekend by renting a sod cutter to get the grass up. All we've got left are a few patches of grass that the cutter missed. How deep do dandelions need to be dug up so the roots will die? We don't want to use chemicals such as Roundup.
Well, the roots can go down maybe like a foot or so, and so you want to try to get as much of the taproot as you can. So if you can, basically all of it. The smaller dandelions have smaller roots, but the bigger ones can go down maybe a foot or so.
Okay. Also, since the ground is dense, do you recommend using a rear tiller to dig up the dirt? We have a front tiller or line tiller for light duty, but it stalls out when trying to till the dirt.
Yeah, probably a heavy duty one, yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll go next to Richard in Des Moines. Richard, welcome to Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Thank you. Yes, I have a problem with my fir trees and pine trees. I have many, many of them on my farm, and I found that they seem to be infested with something they call a bagworm. And so how do I counteract that, either cure it or rather treat it when it has occurred or prevent it? And the same hold true for fungus.
Yes, the bagworms have been a big problem in Iowa. They used to be primarily down in southern Iowa. We're seeing them kind of throughout the state, especially in those evergreen trees. They can feed on the trees enough to actually kill them. And what it is, those bags hanging on the fir trees and the pine trees right now contain the eggs of the caterpillars. Those caterpillars hatch and start feeding. You can use insecticides on them. The big thing is to time it. Usually June is about the right time. Most people recommend you treat, and basically anything works that you can buy at the garden center. The caterpillars are not, they're pretty delicate. You just get good coverage on the trees, treat, and then treat again about 2 weeks later, and that should help. But do watch and keep an eye on it, because they can, the populations tend to start and then build up on those trees. So, yeah, big problem.
In regard to the fungus problem that we've had in the last wet years, how to counteract or prevent that?
Well, I think the first thing there would be to have it identified so you know exactly what you're dealing with. And again, you could send a sample to the Plant Diagnostic Clinic here at Iowa State, and they can identify that and get back to you on what to use and how often to use it.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
And that can be, you can find that address at the Iowa State University website.
Right, or contact your county extension office, too. So.
Well, those bagworms, I've never had them before, but boy, they're sure in there now, and they're attacking my arborvitae and everything that seems to have a green needle on it.
Yeah, you can also, if you have smaller evergreen trees, just go out there any time in the next couple of weeks and pick off what you can. because they're not going to hatch until June. So if you have smaller evergreen trees that you can easily reach and simply remove them physically and then destroy them, you can do that anytime in the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks, Richard. We appreciate the call. We'll go next to Randy in Pocahontas. Randy, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Just like to have some information on heirloom tomatoes. I like to start my tomatoes and stuff in the house, and I've got some hybrid tomatoes started, and they're coming up. Anything special I have to do with planting my heirloom seeds?
No, basically about the same thing as far as starting them inside. I typically like to start them inside about 6 weeks before I intend to plant them outside. And as soon as they germinate inside, I'll put them underneath some artificial lighting so they get plenty of light. And then about a week before I plant them, I'll break them outside and harden them outside for a few days before planting.
Okay, I'm a little more low-tech than that. I don't have the lighting and stuff.
Okay.
But I have a front porch that I started it in before. But when I plant my heirlooms outside, should I separate them from my hybrid plants too or not?
For the most part, they're self-pollinated. That shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. And then I can save seeds at the end of the year on my heirlooms?
Yes, you can. The hybrids, I wouldn't waste my time.
Okay. And you have any, have you ever tried what they call a black tomato as far as flavor?
Well, there are many, many, many heirloom varieties on tomatoes. There are some very interesting colors and shapes and things like that. Some like the taste, some don't. It's kind of a personal thing as far as taste, but there are many, many heirloom varieties out there, and some are quite unique.
Yeah, I just got an order. Have you heard of Seed Savers before?
Yes, I have. I received their catalog, and they have many, many tomato heirloom varieties, yes.
Thanks, Randy.
Yeah, thank you much.
We appreciate it. Good luck with the heirlooms.
Yeah.
We'll go next to Chris in West Des Moines. Chris, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question for Richard Duran and Laura Jesse?
I have a bald cypress that's probably about 25 to 30 feet, and it's maybe at the base, 6 to 8 inches across, and last year it didn't leaf out very well, and then this year I noticed that there's a pretty good sized crack in the trunk that goes for at least 2 feet in length, and it's about a quarter to a half inch wide. The tree, though, is still alive, and it seems to be budding out. The question really is there anything I should do about the crack, or just let it go?
I would leave it. You really can't do much with a crack on a tree. It doesn't really do any good to, let's say, try to fill it or paint it.
Okay.
So I would let the tree kind of deal with the injury on its own. As far as why it didn't leaf out very well last year, I wonder if the previous winter was so cold, and it was a very cold winter, that maybe there was some winter damage or cold damage to it. Because it is more of a southern tree species, it's amazingly hardy.
Okay.
But the previous winter, I think we had some very, very cold temperatures, record cold temperatures, and I wonder if maybe there was some damage there that caused it to leaf out fairly poorly.
Now, if as it ages, will it basically outgrow that effect, or is it always susceptible to having winter damage if it gets too severe?
Well, I think it's always going to be potentially a problem. Because that's mainly genetics as far as that controls the hardiness of a plant. And I'm guessing in most cases those are grown from seeds.
Okay.
And so you will have some small differences in hardiness when you grow up those trees.
Okay.
But on the other hand, make sure the tree is as healthy as you can so that a healthy tree is typically a little bit more hardy than a weak tree. So do everything that you can to ensure its vigor, and hopefully it's going to be okay.
Okay. Yeah, because would it be wise to do like root feeding on it? It's in a wet location. That's why we got it, because they say, you know, it can basically grow in standing water.
Probably. Right, it can. I don't think I would do root feeding, no.
Okay.
My guess is that's not necessary. If it is growing in an area where you do fertilize the yard, then the tree is getting its fair share when you fertilize the actual grass.
Okay.
Because the roots of the tree extend out into the yard, and they'll get some of that, and so will the grass.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for calling, Chris. We appreciate the call.
You're welcome.
We're listening to Horticulture Day. We're talking plants and insects today with Extension Horticulturist Richard Geron and Extension Entomologist Laura Jesse. We have, if you have a question, 1-866-780-9100 or Talk of Iowa, iowapublicradio.org to email your questions. And there's an email here from Jenny in Altoona. She asks, I'm wondering what amendments you would add to a garden plot to enrich the soil. Over the years, I've added compost here and there and rotated my crops. This has helped some, but my plants seem to struggle and are always pretty small.
Well, organic matter is always something that you can always add. That's very helpful usually. But there are so many factors that can affect growth in the garden. As far as the amount of sunlight.
She says its garden is well drained in a sunny location.
But insects, disease, there's so many other factors that can affect plant growth. It may not be a fertility issue. It may not be a soil issue. There are a lot of factors out there. They could also do a soil test, send a soil test to Iowa State, see if there's any problem. But as far as organic matter, you can add too much. So you want to be a little bit conservative on that. You can add a small amount maybe every other year, and that should be fine. And you may want to do a soil test.
Okay. We'll go next to Ann in Rock Island, Illinois. Ann, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Well, thank you very much. I have a white lilac tree. It's on the east side of the house. And that bad freeze we had in the spring several years ago, of course, killed off all the blossoms, but it has not blossomed since then. And I wonder, it grows well, but no blossoms.
Well, if it was damaged by the cold, that's not a permanent thing, so it should resume its normal blooming habit. So
yeah,
I can't really explain why it's not.
Yeah, should I cut it back in the fall severely? And
no, I would not. I would kind of leave it as it is. Now, this is a tree rather than a shrub.
It's a bush, but it's a very tall kind of a columnar shape. And it's about 6 years old now, but we had blooms on it the first year, and then after that we had that real late freeze in April, and after that nothing.
Now,
it has not bloomed since.
Do you know, is that a Japanese tree lilac?
I don't think so. I got them from the Soil and Water Service here locally.
Okay. When you plant a tree or a lilac, sometimes they don't bloom for several years until they get large enough, mature enough to bloom. So sometimes maturity is an issue. I don't think I would do much in the way of pruning. It's a fairly young tree or plant at this point. I would just leave it and see what it does. I wouldn't fertilize it. I would just leave it alone and not prune it and see. It should bloom this year or next year.
Well, there's no buds on it at all this year. And it's about 7 feet tall.
Well, it still has the potential, and I'm guessing it will eventually. I'm not sure why it's not blooming currently, but I think it will eventually.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks, Ann. Good luck with that. We hope it blooms for you. We'll go next to David in Amana. David, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Hello. Thank you. It may have been addressed already, the fellow with the tree with the split in it.
Hmm.
I've got a similar situation with an ash tree, and it produces very well. I mean, it's maybe overabundant, and it might be its overexuberance that has led to the problem. It's kind of splitting in the trunk. It's like it's separated, and it's about, you can actually see inside the tree.
Okay.
I wonder if there's anything I should do about that.
Well, there's nothing you can do that's going to help the tree a great deal. Where is that tree located? Is it located near a garage or a house or some building?
Yeah, it's in the front yard, yes.
I would have an arborist look at that and see if that's a hazard tree, and it very well could be. And your best option might be to remove it, because if that's next to a building where if it does fail in a storm, it could end up on the house or whatever and cause extensive damage. And so that would be my biggest concern, that that could happen and cause extensive damage. So I would probably contact an arborist and have them make a visit, inspect the tree, and decide if that really should come down or not. That would be the biggest question that I would have. And then if it has to come down, then I would replace that with a different tree species, maybe an oak or a maple, because the ash are doomed anyway with the emerald ash borer, most likely. So if you do have to cut it down, replace it with a different tree species.
We're almost out of time here. I wanted an entomologist to weigh in on the emerald ash borer situation. Nothing yet, right, Laura?
No emerald ash borer in Iowa yet. It's certainly to the east, to the north, to the south. So we do think that it will be a matter of time. We can't predict these things. I just tell everyone, love their ash. Don't worry about it. But as Richard said, as you go to replace trees, replace with something else.
Okay, we are out of time. Thank you all for joining us today. Richard Giron, Laura Jesse, for your advice and expertise. We had a production assistant from Dennis Reese and technical assistance from Christina Sarnelli. Iowa Public Radio is, or Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. We'll be back next week with Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.